Afternoon, everybody, welcome. We'll begin with a roll call, Madam Clerk, please.
Blythe?
Here.
Cathedral City?
Here.
Coachella?
Here, the Mayor Pro Tem Anderson.
Okay. Desert Hot Springs?
Present.
Indian Wells?
Present.
Indio?
Present.
La Quinta?
Present.
Palm Desert?
Here.
Palm Springs? Rancho Mirage?
Here.
Riverside County?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, would you give us a pledge of allegiance, please?
Ready to begin? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. The next item is public comments. We received two requests to speak. If anyone else would like to speak, please fill out a form to the clerk. The first one is Mr. Brent Newman. Mr. Newman, you have 3 minutes, please.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Brent with Wide Green Energy Fund. I'm manager of District Development and Government Relations for Southern California for Wide Green. I mean, you've probably met my colleague Crystal Crawford, who's come out here a number of times. So I'm just here to introduce myself and to give you a quick update. There's been a lot of work in the area of consumer protections in the last 12 months. In fact, the whole industry has really changed a lot in the last 18 months. AB 2693 was signed by the governor, went into law first of the year, which is the Pace Preservation and Consumer Protection Act. I believe there's another piece of legislation that was just introduced as well. What it really does is codify across the industry consumer protection. A lot of them are already in place, but this is just making it more consistent throughout the industry as we continue to grow. Real quick update here in Coachella Valley, just looking at some of our numbers, it looks like we've done 2,033 residential projects for approximately $41 million and 24 commercial jobs for nearly $2 million. So that's just my quick update. I'll leave some business cards here if anybody would like to communicate with me.
Thank you very much. The next request is from Mr. Steve Brown.
Good afternoon, everyone. First of all, I'd like to introduce myself. It's so nice to be around so many friends and smiling faces. I'm very pleased to be here, as well as looking forward to meeting all the new electors that I have worked with in the past. My name is Steve Brown. I'm currently doing some special project for Assembly Member Eduardo Garcia. I retired from the city of Coachella about 7 years ago. I retired from the Desert Healthcare District about 2 weeks ago. And on my fourth day of retirement, and I twisted my arm and come back just for a short time. Just quickly, I just wanted to update you on a couple of bills, one from last year, one currently this year, probably touches this committee particularly regarding RCTC. The Assembly member submitted over 25 bills last Friday, which was the deadline for the submittal. At the March meeting, I will come with a completed list with all the language and all that will be required by them, and kind of highlight the ones that might be more important to you. But currently, last year, AB 2414 was the bill that was signed into law by the governor for the expansion of the Desert Healthcare District, which currently ends at Cook Street, but goes west of Cook Street to Desert Hot Springs. This bill expands the district by vote in 2018. To the Salt and Sea. Basically, it includes most of all the incorporated areas up to the Salt and Sea. Right now, the bill required the Desert Healthcare District to submit an application by January 5th, which they did. LAPCO has until by June 5th of 2017 to approve the application. The application must be approved and must include a funding source. I talked to LAPCO this afternoon. The application is being processed. They are awaiting a definite funding source from the district. Some of the funding sources that have come up have been a possible tax, which the Assembly member is really in favor of because the West Valley doesn't pay an additional tax. It's not a supplemental tax on their bill. Possibly some negotiation with the hospital lease for some funding when that happens. It could be just some private contributions. Right now, the purpose of the bill really was to just extend the services that are currently provided through the grants. The healthcare district receives over $6 million a year in property tax increment, and they provide a little over $3 million each year to provide projects and programs for improved healthcare and wellness. And that's really the purpose right now, and I think eventually have a funding source for that, and eventually have a long-term funding source that could do facilities and some type of infrastructure for healthcare across the whole valley, which would involve everyone. The second bill that is we submitted this past week was AB 1189, which is the Riverside County Transportation Act, which would revise the Public Utilities Code to authorize Riverside County voters to impose upon themselves a maximum tax rate of 1%. The bill will bring RCTC's authority into line with the constitutional requirements that special taxes must be enacted by 2/3 of the people. AB 1189 is consistent with legislation sponsored by other self-help counties in recent years to determine that their own futures through local option sales tax at a 2/3 threshold. So I'm sure Tom could jump in sometime if there's any other important facts at this moment, but I'll just bring those, and I'll bring you as many, all the bills that we have the legislation for and the wording at the March meeting. Thank you.
Just 2 points. Number one, we're going to be dark in March, so it'll be April. And would you work with Tom or the city or the clerk and get on the agenda so that you're not limited to 3 minutes?
Okay, I appreciate that. I sure will. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. The next item is executive committee or director's comments. Are there any directors that would like to make a comment? Mr. Hobart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The state of California made available a considerable sum of money under the authority of the state's active transportation program. Numerous organizations in the Coachella Valley filed applications seeking portions of the grant fund. CVAG filed such an application on April 20, 2016 on behalf of the CV Link project. There were a total of 456 applications with enough money available to award funding to just 50 of those projects. According to the terms of the grant rules, quote, all of the recommended funding, 100%, will go to projects within or directly benefiting disadvantaged communities, end quote. Winners and losers among the grant applicants presented plans which the California Transportation Commission, Caltrans, scored according to their rules of procedure. CVLink was the first place winner by a large margin, resulting in CVAG receiving approval for a grant of $24.3 million. Immediately thereafter, a number of other Valley applicants investigated the CVAG application. 11 other organizations signed the letter stating, numerous census tracts that qualify as severely disadvantaged are included in the CV Link project application. For example, the unincorporated communities of Thermal, Mecca, and Oasis, despite the current project scope not directly reaching those communities. Despite the misleading presentation of data and the fact that the severely disadvantaged communities may never benefit from the project, the application was awarded a large number of points for providing a benefit to disadvantaged communities. We strongly recommend that the Commission staff conduct an additional review and possible rescoring of the project application. The CVAG application was reviewed, and Caltrans discovered that the application both included census tracts from Mecca, Thermal, and Oasis, all of which are very low-income communities, as well as an absence of census from our wealthy areas. Consequently, Caltrans rescoring confirmed grounds for disqualifying the CMAG score and thus rescinding the anticipated $24.3 million grant. This rescoring resulted in Caltrans rescinding the intended grant to CMAG for the CD Link project. Caltrans records also reflect that the CMAG application failed to inform them the two gaps in the allegedly continuous CD Link existed because of positions taken by Rancho Mirage and Indian Wells. Rancho Mirage will send CMAG a formal request to put on the next executive committee agenda, quote, consideration of conducting a professional investigation, end quote, into whether the circumstances just referenced were part of the CMAG application intentionally or unintentionally, and if intentionally committed, who among CMAG employees is responsible. We should not be seen as it being indifferent to something of this magnitude. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any further comments from commissioners?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi. Chairman, hi.
Welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back. I wanted to just bring up and discuss the letter that all of you received. I sent it out on Friday with respect to the homelessness issue. Specifically, this was brought up because of the transitioning of Roy's Resource Center and what it's going to become, and the burden then that falls on all the rest of the cities in our community to manage the homeless issue and crisis. And so it was reported at our council meeting recently that there are dollars that are considered being spent on rapid rehousing. And I would like to ask and suggest the committee here to consider the need for more facilities to be west of East Valley. Indio really shares or takes care of the burden of homeless in our valley. The core position or the core opportunity that Chief Twist put together is outstanding. It has graduated a few hundred people at best. Most recently, 50 people graduated from the rescue mission. Two-thirds of those individuals were not from Indio. So it's an excellent program, but it is not without its challenges, and that program resides in Indio. And the people that are part of that program end up in Indio at the rescue mission. I think it's important and critical that we have a facility closer to the west end of the valley. I think this CORE program does wonders for the homeless issue. It has made significant inroads, but we can't continue to make inroads without a facility like the rescue mission in a second location further west. So I would like to ask for the consideration, serious consideration, to place a facility here on the west end and to relieve Indio of some of the burden. At some point, the rescue mission is very close to capacity. On some days, it is at capacity. And when it reaches capacity, the challenge becomes there is no place for those people to go. And so they spill out into our streets and into our neighborhoods. And I think that we will have much more success if that second facility, along with the CORE program, is shared by the cities to the west of us. And just to circle back around, I would like to ask for serious consideration of the cities on the western end of town to please discuss with the rescue mission placing another facility in the western end of the environs of this valley, please.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Any other directors wish to be heard? I have one quick item, and that is on item 7B is the Community Choice Aggregation Update. I have to recuse myself on that matter because our city attorney has concluded that it might have a material financial effect distinguishable from the public generally on a client of my law firm, specifically Southern California Edison. I would request unanimous consent to take that last, so that because I have to physically leave the room, rather than leave the room and come back, with your permission, we'll take that item last, so that and then Mr. Henry Mayor Henry will act as the chair for that item. Does anyone have any objection to that? Seeing none, thank you very much for that personal courtesy. The next item is the consent calendar. These matters will all be heard by one single vote unless any director would like to remove something from the consent calendar and have it heard separately.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We would request we pull item K. K is in...
King?
King.
Okay, anything further?
I'd like to pull item E simply for comment.
E is in easy?
E is in easy.
Anything further? May I have a motion, please, for the balance of the consent calendar?
Move consent calendar amendment.
Second. Is there any objection? Without objection, it is ordered that all items except E and K are approved. And do we take those now?
Yes.
Okay, let's do them in order. We'll start with E. Mr. Mon.
Yeah, absolutely. I just wanted to comment on this program specifically. I noticed at the end of the resolution, the list of unincorporated areas listed here. They were just in parentheses, some unincorporated areas. I would like to recommend that should CBAG receive this grant, that in fact you work with County Department of Waste Resources, County EDA, and the district to identify the unincorporated areas that will most likely need these kinds of events if you choose to hold them in those areas. There's one area here that's actually third district, and there's some areas here that I think will really benefit that are not listed. And so just make that recommendation should this grant come through.
Is there anyone else who would like to be heard on this matter? Would you like to make a motion?
Yes, I'd like to move.
Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any objection to this item? Seeing none, it will be recorded as unanimously approved. Item K, Mr. Hobart.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we work through this process, we need to ensure that the revenue from this new tax is primarily allocated to the cities and the county. With the loss of redevelopment agencies, decreased gas tax, and increased public safety costs, cities and the county have lost the resources necessary to properly maintain our streets and roads. Regional transportation agencies will continue to receive the majority of Measure A funds and 100% of TUMP for the regional roadways. We must focus this new tax effort on cities and the county because we are the agencies that actually shoulder the burden of maintaining our streets and roads. As confirmed by the voter renewal of Measure A in 2002, our focus needs to shift from the build-only mentality to maintaining and improving what we have built. The only way for cities and the county to accomplish this task is for this new tax to be primarily allocated to the agencies that actually maintain the streets and roads. We should also put taxpayer safeguards in place that limit the amount of salaries and benefits that can be charged against this new tax. These new funds should be focused on our streets and roads instead of being siphoned off by the administrative overhead of numerous governmental agencies, which we are currently doing with our Measure A funds. To support a new tax, many of us will want ironclad assurances that nothing goes to CityLink, to salaries or benefits, or other political whims. The money must be structured for true transportation processes to gain our support.
Thank you. Is there a motion on Measure on item K?
Make a motion.
I'll second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Thank you. Passes unanimously. The next item is item 7A. Who has this?
Gary will lead the staff report on this.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Presented to you, actually, CBEC's final audited financial report, single audit report, SAS 114 letter, and mentioned letter for fiscal year 2015-2016. The annual audit was performed by the accounting firm of LSL CPAs. Staff recommendation is that the executive committee receive and file the reports. The technical advisory committee concurs with staff's recommendation. Mr. Richard Kikuchi, a partner with LSL CPAs, will briefly go over the audit and will answer any questions that you have regarding the audited financial statements.
Good afternoon, members of the executive committee. My name is Rich Kikuchi, and I'm here representing LSL CPAs, your financial auditors. And we are here to present your June 30, 2016 audited financial statements. So the objective of our audit is really to assure you as the executive board that the amounts of these financial statements are materially correct.
You're not the accountants that handled the thing last night, are you?
No, because I just heard the partner got fired on the way here too. Yeah, I text my partner, I go, that's tough. Had to have a little sympathy for him. But yeah, the objective is really that you can be assured that the amounts in these financial statements are materially correct and you can make management decisions on that. Our audit actually began back in July where we did a lot of planning. We looked at the policies and procedures in place here at the association. And then we came back out in November. And at that time, we did our detailed account analysis along with Gary and his staff, put together the financial statements. And we did enough test work that I feel comfortable to render what's called an unmodified opinion, and that really is the highest level opinion you can get, that basically saying without modification, I feel that the amounts of these statements are materially correct. Along with the financial statements, we issue what's called a SAS 114 letter and also an internal control letter. Very standard, there were no reportable conditions to report this year. The audit went very well, we feel good about the audit. I do want to thank Gary and his staff for helping to get this audit accomplished. And I'm here to answer any questions if you might have any.
Are there questions or comments from any of the directors? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you. Excuse me, Mr. Chair, can I get the can I get a decision file motion?
Yes. Would someone make a motion?
I'll make the motion to receive and file with the short comment that it's great to see an unmodified audit.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed no. It's unanimous. Thank you very
thank
much
you.
And thank you for your very hard work.
Thank you.
Pursuant to the unanimous consent, we're going to skip B to later and we'll go to C, Bicycle and Pedestrian Safety Group. Mm-hmm.
Good afternoon. So we're bringing forward a 2017 bicycle and pedestrian safety program. What does it include? It includes $10 million in CBAG, up to $10 million in CBAG regional funding. And the idea is to make our roads safer. We're looking at accidents, fatalities, and general safety. There's a lot of things that can be done, but not so much with our infrastructure funding. And so we're looking at what are the causes. There's the vehicle and the driver. The vehicle might not be maintained correctly, could be broken, the driver could be impaired, the driver could be distracted. Increasingly, these are issues. We have special conditions, just like we have today. It seems that this is a wet place to live now. And we have a lot of rain for drivers that aren't used to rain causes issues. There's also sandstorms, there's glare from the evening and the morning. And we have cyclist and pedestrian behavior. Again, increasingly, cyclists are distracted, they can be impaired, they may not be riders or pedestrians that are accustomed to using our transportation system. So what can we fix? What can we do? It's the physical environment. As far as our infrastructure funding. It's intersections. Are they designed correctly? Are the intersections developed? Are they developed correctly? We can look at signals. Is the timing correct for pedestrians? Is the timing correct for vehicles? That's what's causing the accidents and fatalities. We can look at roadway design. Are the roadways too narrow? Do they have the appropriate stormwater coverage. There's still, in this day and age, still bicycles. In fact, just recently on the Twitter Palm Springs, someone got the bicycle tire stuck in a storm drain, which shouldn't be happening. Bicycle lanes, are they there? Sidewalks, are they there? Do they need to be there? Are they properly maintained? Are they designed correctly? And finally, striping. You can have a bicycle lane, but if the striping hasn't been maintained, it may not be visible at night, it may not be visible to the automobile, the driver, or the cyclist in that situation. So those are the things that we can affect. What's driving this? These are national statistics. In 2016, these are the age groups of pedestrian fatalities. And if you look on the right-hand side of this graph, all the rest of the age groups are relatively low until you get to over age 65. And between 65 and 85 plus, that group is over 70% of pedestrian fatalities nationally. Obviously, that's an issue for us here locally because we have our share of people over the age of 65. I don't mean to make light of this, but this is a thing. This is Delaware's program. They're talking about don't join the walking dead. There is a 10% increase in the past year nationally amongst young adults in fatalities, pedestrian fatalities. Why is this? In part because they're listening to headphones. They may be impaired from alcohol and other substances. They may be texting. They may be calling. But they're distracted. They're not paying attention to the system. Again, that's what's driving some of these statistics. It was a surprise to me, but between 20 miles an hour, at 20 miles an hour, if a vehicle hits a pedestrian, there's a 90% chance, 9 out of 10 pedestrians will survive that impact. One will be a fatality. If you just double that to 40 miles an hour, which again isn't that fast, 9 out of 10 become fatalities. Only one individual will survive that collision. So that's, we're not necessarily advising lower speeds, but I thought that was a telling statistic. When you look at pedestrian deaths as a percent of total motor vehicular deaths, it's a very consistent trend, 40% in the last 10 years. It's increasing. That could be that we're becoming more successful in encouraging pedestrians to utilize the transportation system, but the fatalities are an unfortunate trend. That's nationally. What about the state of California? On this graph, the orange bar on the left is total traffic fatalities. The yellow bar on the right is pedestrian fatalities. California is by far the leader in pedestrian fatalities, and right up there with Texas and Florida for total traffic fatalities. So we see that it's a problem nationally. We see that it's a problem in the state of California. And when we look here locally, we've all seen the headlines in this past year, especially. There were 29 pedestrian fatalities in 2016. And the fatality, we had some fatalities just recently that were in the paper. The headlines just keep coming. And when we look at our statistics in the Coachella Valley, again, this past year, 2016, hopefully it's an outlier, but it's maintaining the trend. That we had almost three times the number of fatalities that we had the previous year. And when you look at Riverside County, even though we're only a fifth of the population, we're a third of fatalities. And again, we're keeping a trend line consistent with the county. So we saw nationally, we saw the state, we see the county, and now we see our own Coachella Valley having a trend line with pedestrian deaths. So what are the key components of this program? It's a $10 million pot of regional funds. We put a $2 million cap on each project. Regional funds. Again, and that was in part to try and fund some of the low-hanging fruit. What are some of the easy fixes that we might be able to fund? Again, we're wanting to spend money to improve safety and reduce injuries and fatalities. We'll stick with our typical 75-25% funding. It must be submitted by a jurisdiction. I know there's some not-for-profits in our valley that are funding programs and other types of safety programs and injury and fatality reductions. This has to be submitted by a jurisdiction, not a school district, not a Rotary club. It has to be a jurisdiction. And it must directly address an existing bicycle and pedestrian safety issue. and it must be associated with regional arterial projects and the most recent TPDS. And we were looking at a May 1 submission deadline for proposals from the cities. That's so that staff has time to review them and bring them back for approval within this fiscal year. So that's the recommendation. Transportation Committee concurred. TAC concurred earlier this afternoon. TTAS also concurred. Any questions?
Thank you. Questions or comments? Yes.
The only comment, I like the program. I think it's good because we do need to address the issues. My concern or my comment is limiting it only to those projects that are in the 2016 transportation, the TPPS, because we may have had projects that were in the last 5 years that we've done, that we've now come back and see that there may be a need for some additional funding to fix some bicycle or pedestrian issues. We're eliminating some major projects. And the one that in Cathedral City that comes to mind is Ramon Road. You know, we've completed that project, but we now have, I mean, we've had 3-4 fatalities, pedestrian fatalities on Ramon Road that a couple hundred thousand or something like that could fix by putting some barriers in between medians at some of the crossroads, something like that, that we can't necessarily afford. But in a program like this, could, if we made an application, could fix. So I would suggest that we eliminate that 2016 TPPS requirement and have it as a grant proposal submitted by the agencies, and they have to come up with a justification of why it should be prioritized.
One thought for all of you. Makes great sense. I wish I would have thought about it, because in fact this is intended to address deficiencies that may have been around since a roadway was constructed 10 or 20 years ago. One option, if this were to be considered by the executive committee, is just eliminate the phrase, we say 2016 TPPS?
2016 arterial projects.
Yeah. It could be in any TPPS.
That'd be great.
And I think that would address the issue. Yeah.
If that's a motion, I'll second it.
That's a motion.
Did you want to comment on that?
I did want to add one comment. And then remember that the TPPS includes the ATP at this point. And so, in many cases, I've been talking to a lot of the jurisdictions as they've had questions. In many cases, I don't know in this case, although I suspect it is. In many cases, while the TPPS project was a roadway project at the time, has been completed, it may be still on the TPPS as an ATP project.
I don't want to take that chance.
Right. Well, I don't understand. Okay, so everyone knows, it does include all of the TPPS projects that are ATP projects as well.
Mayor Evans.
Yes. Is there additional guidance that CBAG will be providing on exactly what types of projects are being sought? Because I suspect $10 million can go very quickly. And I know Indio and La Quinta are already teaming up on something at Jefferson. And if La Quinta wants to look at another area, do we have the opportunity of doing two different projects? And what happens if the projects are well beyond the $10 million, then how does that ranking system happen in terms of approval, if we generalize the TPPS,
If I might, these are all questions that have been raised at the Transportation Committee. Frankly, we don't know how many applications we're going to get. Each jurisdiction can submit as many applications as it likes. Our staff has been working with your staff already on applications and encouraging that we get a lot of good ones in. If the program is substantially oversubscribed, we're going to come back to you and suggest some way of prioritizing it. But since it's a new program, I really don't know if we're going to get $2 million worth of applications or $30 million of applications. And we'll certainly come back to you with the full list once we have it.
Mayor Hearn.
Thank you. We did have discussion, a lot of discussion about this in transportation, and certainly with 29 lives being lost last year in our valley, the expense on that is huge to families and to just the costs of the investigation and those sorts of things, but it's hard to put a number on a line. But the Go Human effort by Southern California Association of Governments has been a great and effective partner for a lot of cities in the SCAD region. And they have funds that they've used that they took from general funds, never used them, leveraged them to go to create a greater pot of funds for exactly these type of efforts. So I know that, there is a representative from the Southern California Association of Governments here. He can tell us more about Go Human when it is convenient. But I think we should be doing our best to use that partner in the best and most effective, cost-effective and most effective way for the Coachella Valley.
Thank you. There is a motion and a second on the floor. Would any further conversation or discussion or comments?
Please.
Are you ready for the vote? Yes.
I have a comment. It's my understanding, Tom, that you have indicated to Ted Wilde that none of this money could be used with respect to CB Link. Is that correct?
The mayor did ask me whether this program was designed in any way for CB Link. CDAG is not submitting an application. This is for the member jurisdictions to submit. So CB Link isn't on the table as far as I'm concerned.
However, I would imagine jurisdictions can submit proposals that provide links that potentially head towards their section of the CB Link.
Absolutely. It could be a bike lane that connects with CB Link. It could be an access point. But the CB Link project is a separate and distinct project managed by CDAG.
Rancho Mirage has long supported pedestrian and bicycle safety as a part of planning and building our street system. Whenever possible, we include 8-foot-wide concrete sidewalks and bicycle paths to be installed by developers along the project frontage as a condition of approval. Recently, our city striped many miles of Class 2 bike lanes along arterials. We are also identifying all missing 8-foot-wide bike/sidewalk segments for upcoming budget consideration. This program that Eric Cowell has put together is a very practical approach to bicycle safety. It is much more practical and benefits bike riders all over the valley rather than limiting it to one bike path alone. Filling in the gaps in bike lanes, sidewalks, and crosswalks should be the funding priority right behind building and repairing our dilapidated streets. We need to address pedestrian and bicycle safety along our existing streets before we can even spend a dime toward building CB Link. The newspaper stories in recent weeks do not refer to bicycle accidents. In fact, the comment about 19 or 29, whatever that number was, I don't know who you're talking about, but it certainly is not bicycle accidents this year or maybe in combination with other years, but at any rate, the newspaper stories frequently cite pedestrian injuries at street crossings. What can the program do to identify dangerous street crossing locations and support safety modalities with this Measure A money? I note that there was a recent editorial in the Desert Sun date on which is February 11th. At the top of it, it says, Indio crackdown emphasizes the dangers of jaywalking. Indio police recently made a special effort to target jaywalkers. The Desert Sun has been having other articles in the last couple of months, 2 or 3 months. Not one of them talks about bicycle accidents. They talk about pedestrian accidents and other vehicular accidents, primarily at street crossings or mid-street crossings, as the case may be. So we have that problem, and it would be very discouraging for Rancho Mirage to see this program converted by connections of dubious sorts to the CB Link project. CB Link's got its funding issues. They're separate. They should remain separate. We have enough people killed in this valley who are crossing the streets, where we could put, as Mayor Mayor Sam Henrich. There are things we can do to reduce mid-street accidents, I suspect, and I think that that should be our direction, and Ranch Mirage will support this program with the general understanding that it's unlikely to lead to expenditures to benefit CV Link.
Any further comments before we take a vote? The motion is by Mr. Henry, seconded by Mr. Hobart, that the matter be approved as amended, dealing with the TPPS. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Any abstentions? Matter carries unanimously. Before we go to the item where I have to recuse myself, the next is information A through H. Which are not discussion items unless somebody wants to discuss any of the information items under A, 8A through H. Anyone wish to pull anything and discuss anything? Okay, seeing that, I'll call on Mayor Henry to take the gavel, and I have to recuse myself. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
We have a report.
We're on 7B, Community Choice Aggregation Update.
Thank you.
Sorry about that.
Thank you, Mayor Henry, members of the Executive Committee. This is an update and status report on where we are with our Community Choice Program. And what I'd like to do to start with is we have we've been working on this program now since about April of last year with direction from the Executive Committee, and we've made significant progress. Presented to you as part of the staff report is the final draft of our feasibility study and business plan. And as part of our progress in investigating and exploring community choice segregation and some of the opportunities it offers for ratepayers in the Churchill Valley, we've made contact with Don Dane, who is a consultant with the Imperial Irrigation District. Our executive director reached out to Imperial Irrigation District to see if there might be some opportunities for collaboration. And we've been very fortunate to have Mr. Dane's expertise already presented at our Energy and Environment Committee meeting a few weeks ago. So before we get into a status update on where we're at, I'd like to introduce Don Dane and ask him to, he's going to actually review the document that was included as an attachment in your staff report, which identifies some of the kind of primary issues with community choice and the opportunities and some of the potential relationships that we might have with IID.
Good evening, committee members. Again, I'm Don Dane. It's a pleasure to be here with you during this great golf weather evening. Now, I know why there's so many golf courses out here in the desert. As Katie was suggesting, several months ago, a good friend of mine, Vic and Kasarjan, who works in the power area at IID, said, Don, the folks at CVAG were doing some investigations into community choice aggregation. You've been working in that area for a handful of years. Would you mind working with them and IID to see if there's ways that they may be able to mesh mutual expertise as CVAG considers what options might be available for it to jump in the power business. Like most of you, we take electricity for granted, and when it's visible like it is right now, we don't think about it at all. But if the lights were to go out right now, we'd all be thinking about electricity, and I guarantee you there'd be lots of murmuring and booing and ahhing. So CVAG, in conjunction with some other local public agencies, did the Inland Power Study. You're probably familiar with that. I'm not going to go through that. I'm going to approach this from a little different direction, which says, if you're considering jumping into the power business and you're the CVAG board and you're going to be ultimately responsible for running that business, is there a way to feel more comfortable that, given what, with some exception, most of you don't have a lot of expertise in the technicalities of the power business, do you feel comfortable running a business like that? So I'm going to hit a few of the issues from kind of management level, and if If you have any questions, please interrupt me or save them at the end, and I'll be happy to address them. Number one, community choice energy is very complex. It's been made more complex since energy deregulation in the mid-90s and many bankruptcies and the Enron demise, the establishment of the Cal ISO, and the last decade's establishment of renewable portfolio standards and the like. Very complex, and if you jump into this business, you have to comply with all those regulations. Okay. The good news is there's a whole host of experts out there that know about these regulations and can assist and perform these activities for you. In the United States, there's 3,000 or more public power entities right now. In California, there's 50. IID happens to be the third largest public power entity in California. Most of these entities are good size. Some of them are very, very small, 1 or 2 megawatts in size. And virtually all of them are members of some form of power-related joint powers agency to receive all or some of the services they need or all of some of the power supply they need. And that is the point. There's really nothing new about it. Most of your communities run trash or storm drains or other municipal enterprises, and electricity becomes another municipal enterprise that can be either run independently by a given municipality or collectively through a JPA, either an existing JPA or a newly established JPA. What are the success requirements? Well, to have an engaged and informed board that really oversees and accepts responsibility for the long-term and day-to-day business operations. Again, it's a capital-intensive business. A CCA of the size of a CVAG, if all members were to participate, would have a budget in the neighborhood of $200 million a year. That's a sizable budget item, and you would be responsible for the administration and oversight of those expenditures. You need a technically competent and capable staff. It can be various size, from 2 maybe to 20 folks, depending upon what type of structure you utilize to implement a program. Also, you want to reach out to your customers. One of the benefits of public power, local community choice, is that in board meetings like this, you can have members of the community come in and they can either thank you for the job that you've been doing or admonish you for the job they wish you had been doing. It works both ways. You're all familiar with the public input process. And I would also say, if you get in the power business, it's not something to take on a willy-nilly basis. I like to suggest you look at a century of public power. You think of it as, if we go into this business, we'll start it tomorrow, we'll be here for 100 years tomorrow, and you will manage your organization with that long-term perspective in mind. Timing is important. If you look at this chart, the red line is a proxy for power market prices from approximately the year 2000 to April of 2017. And you can see the power market is pretty volatile. That red line goes up and down, and most of us have no control over that. Enron thought it did, but it ended up not to have control over that. That green line is about where the power price should be for an entity that wants to jump into community choice aggregation to be able to undertake those responsibilities and still offer members of your community's power prices that are at or below the existing investor-owned utility. In your case, down south here in Southern California, Edison. You can see that the legislation establishing CCAs was passed in 2002. And if you look at the left-hand side of that graph, you'll see that the red line was above the green line for most of those years. The first established community choice was Marin Clean Energy up in the North Bay area. And that started operation in 2010. And as you can see, in 2010, that red line was below the green line. It was conducive to Marin's establishing rates that were lower than in Northern California than Pacific Gas and Electric rates in that case. Those rates are still, power market rates are below investor-owned utility prices right now for generation, based primarily because of low natural gas prices, but also because demand in California has essentially been stagnant since 2008. Electricity demand statewide peaked in 2008 and actually hasn't exceeded that level since. And there's a lot of excess capacity in the state. With the establishment of the renewable portfolio standards, there's lots of power plants out there. There's lots of capacity. So the power market tends to be reflecting marginal cost, which is generally fuel cost only. That's why we use natural gas as a proxy for power price. How big is a CVAG? Again, 200 average megawatts. If all participating CVAG members jumped into a CVAG CCA, from a power supply perspective, you would be the 10th largest public power organization in California, between Glendale and Burbank, as the case may be. Some of the really smaller ones, like the City of Biggs and Shelter Cove and a handful of other small utilities in Northern California, are very, very small. So you would be a sizable entity. Some have said, well, gee, what if all CVAG members don't participate? Well, in some of the studies I've done, there's not a hard cut point, but there tends to be a cut point of around 50 average megawatts. That's about, so 25% of CVAG members participated by load. That's about the size it would take to warrant and justify establishing a CVAG CCA. If you were much below 50 average megawatts, you might want to consider jumping in with an existing CCA, joining another CCA, or maybe look at some other options. Imperial Irrigation District, again, is the third largest public power entity in California, and it's what we call full service. It does the whole nine yards of electricity planning, production, accounting, and billing, and the like. It's about 400 average megawatts, about 800 megawatt peak. So it would be twice as large as a CVAG CCA in that case. But it already has the entire array of skill sets to plan, deliver, and schedule and dispatch electricity on a minute-to-minute basis. Most of us see electricity and we don't see the whole host of cooks and bakers, plumbers and electricians that are literally behind the curtain balancing this power supply on a minute-to-minute and second-to-second basis. They're there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And you will have to play in that market if you do that, just like IID plays in that market on a minute-to-minute basis. They have a full array of skill sets that a CCA needs, although they don't have all the day-to-day practical experience of dealing in the community choice aggregation world, which, if you're familiar with legislation, it has its own set of rules and regulations that must be complied with and followed. Now, they can learn and adapt and do those, perform those functions, but there also are a host of other actors out there that are available to do those functions. One of the key areas I see where IID, if you wanted to establish some type of a link with IID, would be in the resource planning, resource procurement, resource scheduling, and dispatching efforts. 80 to 90% of the costs of a community choice aggregation entity are associated with the procurement of wholesale power, the cost of goods sold. The raw product is the bulk of your cost. IID has a substantial amount of experience in building and developing and contracting for electric power supply. That would be a wonderful link to make, even if they didn't do the whole 100% of your needs. Public power has a tendency to share plants. If they build a new solar project, you might be able to take a small piece of it or a large piece of it, or vice versa, and work together to fully subscribe projects. There's a couple of other entities in Southern California. There's the Southern California Public Power Authority. SCAPA, for short, has been involved since 1980 in the collective building and operation of power plants for public power organizations in the South. So these entities are all open and available. I know SCAPA is actively considering how to become more involved with the community choice aggregation programs that are becoming established in California. In summary, I'd just like to suggest to you that if you were to decide to go into this program, there's a large number of resources and expertise out there that would be available to you. You would have ultimate responsibility, as some of you I can see are old as I am, you may remember where the buck stops. It stops right here when it comes to community choice aggregation. You would be responsible for it, but there's a whole host of resources available to assist you in that endeavor. One of those resources, which is very proximate and physically adjacent, is IID, and I know with talking with some of the staff over there, they're very interested in, if you were to establish a CCA, to seeing if there's some manner or way to assure and assist with the success of an ultimate program. If you do go down that road, if you do slam bang a CCA program, it's probably a 12-month timeline. I know some of the public organizations you're involved with right now are in the process or close to issuing a request for proposals, which will go out and tap into some of the market proponents and market vendors that are out there to suggest ways of helping set up a community choice aggregation program for CBAG or some of the other local entities. That's kind of the long and the short of it. I'd like to give you reassurance that in my 30 years of experience, I've worked with Palo Alto and the city of Redding and the city of Lompoc, which is the closest one I'm familiar with that is closest to you folks. And they all have local government boards or city councils that handle these electricity responsibilities, and they've all done it very, very well. The city of Alameda, for example, is the oldest public utility west of the Mississippi, and it's been around for close to 135 years, serving the interests of its community, and its power prices are about two-thirds of the power prices of Pacific Gas and Electric. It's neighboring investor-owned utility. So with that, thank you for the time, and I'd certainly be glad to answer any questions you may have.
Are there any questions?
Thank you.
The recommendation is to receive the final draft of the Inland Choice Power Community Choice Aggregate Business Plan and authorize staff to work with the chair of the Energy and Environmental Resource Committee to establish a ad hoc working group to evaluate the options. And we do have several options that have been put into the plan.
So moved.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Yes.
Three quick points. In the newspaper article of just a few days ago, it was a front page story that says, quote, after reviewing a feasibility study commissioned by CBAG and the other regional agencies, they, Rancho Mirage, as they're referring to, decided they could run a leaner, a more cost-effective CCA on their own. I saw that statement about Rancho Mirage making a decision after reviewing a CBAG feasibility study.
You did it before that, if I'm not mistaken.
Wait, what?
You did it before that, if I'm not mistaken. Made that decision.
That's the point I'm making. I was making it slower.
for dramatic
purpose.
I'm just a get-to-the-point type of person.
Yeah, but anyway.
Oh, that's Desert Center Capital Attraction.
Rancho Mirage City Council meeting, Nostalgia was sitting next to the reporter who wrote the story. I saw the story online, so I called Sammy Roth, and I said, your facts are mistaken. They're not facts. Rancho Mirage made a decision well before CBAG began pursuing the issue. And I would like you to change that and take that out of the story. It was online. It didn't go on the press until 2 days later. Usually it's online, it goes on the next day, but this time it didn't. And I sent him an email. that he could have quoted some things from if he had been interested. Now, I can't say that he got that false information from the spell sheet, but all I can say is that it was false and they didn't change it. They left it in 2 days later, knowing that it was a false statement. So as far as CBAC is concerned, we would appreciate any misunderstanding along those lines be corrected rather than any other approach to it. The next point I wanted to make is we would respectfully request that you take Rancho Mirage out of your feasibility study. You're adding our power purchase to the entire CBAC group that are participating, and that is unreasonable and it misleads the public, and it is a significant amount of energy that we use in Rancho Mirage. Small though we may be, we are like third, I think, in among the cities in usage with respect to the, I assume not IID communities, that's what we're talking about. The other thing is, CBAC was born in the process of assembling a joint powers agreement that all of the cities, some of you weren't part of it at that time, Rancho Mirage was. There were about, I don't know, five or six cities that began the creation of CBAC. It was to assist with transportation issues. That was the purpose of CBAC. Mutual problems of a transportation type issue. And it just strains the services that are already provided by CBAC to go into a new area. Why do it? There are other ways that any city that wants to enter into a CCA a relationship can do so rather easily, I think. But anyway, I just don't think this is where CBAC should be going. I think CBAC should attend to the business at hand. You'll have to have an implementation agreement where the cities surrender their authority to...
And I think that's all in that business plan and what they would work on doing if we chose to do that. I don't think anybody's made a decision yet to do it. Is there a benefit to gathering together and buying power together and that's what we're still looking at?
And that is crucial.
And just to clarify, we did hear from the city of Rancho Mirage that requested we take their city out of the plan. We did get different direction early on, and we're obviously absolutely willing and will take Rancho Mirage out of future drafts of the plan. And just to clarify in terms of CBAC's history, it didn't begin as a transportation business. In fact, we didn't get into the transportation business for a decade or two after its formation. And it, in fact, worked on energy issues long before it worked on transportation issues, which might be might find interesting on this conversation. With respect to CBAC getting into this business, as the acting chair pointed out, no decision has been made. You all may elect to get into the business individually, for example, like Rancho Mirage. You may group together and form a separate JPA. You may group together with cities in Western Riverside County and San Bernardino to do the same. All of those options are still under consideration. We have not received direction from the Energy Environment Committee nor the Executive Committee on how this will all play out. But our sense is, and by the way, thank you very much, Don and IID, for providing Don. Thank you for providing some technical analysis. Our sense is this is good for business, and this is good for customers and consumers of electricity in the Southern California Edison territory, and a number of options are at play.
I have a quick question, and after hearing what you said, we are exploring whether or not we work with, I think, is it WRCOG or is it just...
Yes.
Western Riverside.
Yes, it's
WRCOG. It is, so we are exploring the
actually,
option.
There's, actually, that is an option. Just working with Western Riverside itself is an option. Being Coachella Valley outside of IID is an option. I like the opportunity that now maybe joining with that wasn't
so discussed. So we just have a number of
options. There's a whole host of options that are available, including doing it individually.
Same thing.
And including just doing it individually on individual cities. I know I got the information from Isaiah on what Rancho Mirage is doing, and we're looking at that too as an option.
Great, thank you.
It wasn't really clear to me. I know there's a motion in a second. Did the vote occur, Joanna?
No, we had a comment. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Abstain.
Abstain. And one abstention. There are some announcements.
Yeah, and you see those listed. In addition to those listed, we did complete the draft EIR for CV Link. Comment period closed. We got a number of substantial comments. We're expecting the certification of the EIR to occur at 6:30 p.m. after your next executive committee meeting, or in fact, a continuance of that executive committee meeting, probably at the Palm Desert City Hall. Thank you very much. But that has not been quite confirmed with the powers that be that are sitting to my left. So just get a heads up to you if you could.
So that would be after April 24th.
Yeah, on April 24th, assume a much longer executive committee meeting.
Any other announcements? Seeing none, we'll adjourn. Thank you very much.
Great job.